I'll start recording. Welcome to this episode of Pages and Panels. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle, joined always by my co-host, Tim. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
Yes, I am doing good. And we have a real episode. I retired the goofy intro because we have like a respected creator and an amazing book on, so I didn't want to do our dumb George Lopez intro. But I'm very excited. We're going to be talking to writer, artist, creator Glenn Head about his amazing new book coming out from Fantagraphics, Chartwell Manor. Glenn, thank you so much
for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so this book is, I mean, if anyone is kind of aware of the book, it's a pretty incredible compilation of your life in this very obviously traumatic and important time in your life. For anyone, I guess, I always hate doing, like, what's the elevator? But, like, for anyone that maybe not aware of it, what is kind of, like, the elevator pitch you've been giving for the book?
Yeah, this actually is kind of an elevator pitch book in a way, because basically you could say what it comes down to is, I don't know, this is like 10 words or less, boarding school, headmaster, the aftermath. That's the elevator pitch. It tells you everything you need to know without giving you any details, but that's what that is. It's a boarding school experience. A kid, me, the age of 13, gets sent away to this boarding school called Chartwell Manor, which is the name of the book, and it's where I did a couple of years. And it's this kind of, I guess I'd call it a true gothic horror story about what life was like in this place. You find out later on in the book how it was I came to go to this boarding school, which specialized in British discipline. And you can just imagine what that is. Since you've read the book, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But that's, I guess, you know, and I don't use words like trauma too much, but that fits for this, the 2 years I was there. And then, as I say, the rest of the book, and it's a lot of the book, is the aftermath. What it was like following, you know, what life was like following being there. And from age 17 to then, we'll say age 29, and then later on in life. So it's trying to set up and show how these events happened and then how the following events sort of cascaded from the previous ones, is what I'd say.
And I think that's one of the most interesting things about the book and kind of where it really stands above kind of a lot of, I think, comic nonfiction is, like you said, there's obviously a focus on Chartwell Manor, and it's always kind of looms over the larger story, but you take great care in kind of the aftermath, and like, I think it was like almost essentially three chapters afterwards of that in your life, and really, again, pretty kind of, you know, honest, and the intro of the book, you make no bones about, like, you know, these events happened, and whether, like, especially your life-wise, I think you don't really, like, you know, you put everything in there, and I think it's really interesting that you spend so much time focusing on the aftermath, whether, again, it's specifics of how that kind of bled into your life, or just generally even ideas of how you came to this comic. I think that was it, something like even kind of the very early ideas of this comic that you really wanted to focus on that, or was that like something even prior, like were you thinking about the book before you even, you know, made it past where you cover in the book?
Well, I was thinking about doing this book probably from the time I was at school, you know. Mm-hmm. But I guess one way I'd put it is that, like, there are certain incidents that will grab the viewer's attention, but in my opinion, they're not enough. And those things might be, say, an exploding building or a flaming car wreck or a public sex act or something like that. Those are things that they're head turners and we're going to look at them. And the trauma, the bad shit that happened in the early stages of this book, they will probably, I would think, grab a viewer. One will notice a story like that about a terrible gothic style boarding school where horrible things happened. But what's really interesting to me is what follows is, you know, sort of what goes on between the panels, so to speak. I mean, comics have often not had that, not really delved into what the emotional life of characters is, and that's something that I really wanted to do here. Like, I eventually realized that it was going to be very important to me to really develop the characters of, say, my parents, for instance. And I feel that, in actual fact, they are maybe the most fully developed, at least in comparison to the headmaster, who is kind of essentially a snake in the grass. You know, he's a liar, he's a manipulator, he's charismatic, he's abusive, sexually, physically, verbally, all kinds of ways to all the kids. But the truth of it is, there's not really necessarily that much more going on with a criminal like that. You know, he's a big character. He's kind of like almost Falstaff in, you know, proportion of being this big, verbose guy who lies and does all these things. But what I was really looking to do, and was very important to me, was to develop the other characters, the family characters, because they're the ones that really feel the reverberation of the story. I don't know if that answers your question at all.
No, definitely. And I think as well, and they come across again as very interesting characters, and I love that you continually kind of plot-wise check in with them, and there's even the I don't remember the term you use. There's a point where you kind of delve into their backstory.
Kind of.
Yep. Yeah, you're referring to this. It's like a chapter within a chapter. It's about five pages. Called A Digression. And it was important that that be in there so that, see, the story kind of throws you right into the mix with this kid being in this boarding school. And right before that happens, you see him at, I don't know, age 29 or something. But what you don't see is what led up to him being in that boarding school. And that's what that chapter within the chapter kind of does. It shows both my parents and how they came to live in the town that I grew up in and their worldview before I arrived. And then it shows how that worldview affected mine. And then it develops from there. So yeah, it was important to have that.
And even then, I think as a kind of the story, like, again, spoiling anything or kind of talking, but like you make great pains to cover kind of like in your whole life and even coming around as yourself as a parent or the character as a parent, for yourself as a creator, not only writing and drawing this whole book, what was like how did you tackle kind of plotting this out in such a, because I mean, I was thinking about it as I was reading it, like how would I even sit down and kind of tackle my life as a graphic novel, and to do it so succinctly and well-paced and extremely well, like, written, like, what was your kind of process as, like, what you wanted to cover, and even the way you bookend the book?
I think it's really brilliant.
Oh, okay, thank you. Well, actually, that whole thing of bookending it was with this aspect of this Rolling Stones album that has this song on it, that has this line in it, which is, I was schooled with a strap right across my back, and I knew I wanted to use that, so I thought it was a perfect line, and it also fit with this British aspect that I had stepped into when I was at this school, you know, which was kind of shocking to me, and I heard that song around the time, this song is Jumpin' Jack Flash, and I heard it, and I sort of was internalizing that song at that time. And I had that album, this octagon-shaped greatest hits record. And it shows up at various times in the book as a way of just, almost like a soundtrack. And how would I put that? Well, in regards to your question, like in terms of writing this whole story, I think with doing a book of this sort, it's just very important to take a great deal of time and delve into all the stuff that's really important and that's what I was trying to do. I had attempted to tell this story at various other times, and I couldn't quite get a handle on it. And I think the reason was that I had never done anything as expansive as this. This is a 236-page book, and that takes a lot out of you. And it also takes a lot out of you to deal with, you know, the emotional factors, the aspects of that life story, and put it into words, and then put it into pictures. There's even a scene in it where my character is thinking of drawing this and thinking, do I really want to relive that? And, you know, that is, in a sense, the struggle that this book deals with. If you look at the first panel in the book, it shows drawing table with a drawing of this character who went by the name of Sir. That was this headmaster, Terence Michael Lynch. And you return to it many times, and that's what I was trying to show, was my own process of having to return to the drawing table to look at this figure and try to come to grips with drawing him. And so that's what I was trying to put across, was the process of struggling with putting my story and his story in there together in a way without flinching, really telling it as it happened, so to speak. And
go ahead. Well, I think that was, again, I like you said, kind of the draw of the book is obviously, you know, Chartwell Manor being the headline, but it's such an interesting look, not only, again, kind of as your life and that evolution, but also your evolution with comics and your evolution as a creator. And like you said, it almost seems like when you get to the end of the book, it feels like a jump to currently, as I'm like, I felt involved as I was reading it, because it felt like I'm reading a book that was ostensibly the culmination of you as a person being able, I would imagine, to kind of tackle this subject, but also like you said, kind of you as a creator being able to tackle this as a project. And like, as you get to the end, like realizing as I'm reading it, like that this was everything I was reading had come together, was really a cool, I guess, moment as a reader. I was like, I'm reading kind of what I'm seeing him do, and like him come together all at once to make this.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Thanks. I think that's what I was aiming for, you know, that, you come to a kind of completion. Not that my life is over yet, but that's kind of the completion of this story. Yeah.
And was that so important as well to kind of, I would imagine, because obviously it's, I would imagine it's a big part of your life. Also, I think parallel to the Chartwell stuff is that was at the point you covered in the book that you kind of receive your first experience to kind of underground comics.
Yeah, that was actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was actually a big deal. And one thing I was really trying to work out with that, see, early on in the book, there's this kind of nightmare gothic scene of the headmaster coming in, and it's not even, in this instance yet, a sexual abuse thing. It's more just this horrifying tale to these kids, me and these other kids, we're all 12 or 13, about my headmaster as a child sneaking out of the school one night and happening upon some Satanists doing a goat sacrifice. And I really wanted to draw that because it was one of these terrifying moments that you can't get out of your head if you're a kid. And if you're a kid like me, who was very sensitive and had a strong imagination, I could really see in my mind what this Satan worshiping goat sacrifice thing was that he came upon, as well as what he talks about after that, which is he's in his office and the window is down but the curtains are flapping and Satan is upon him. And when you're in this context of a school like this, away from your parents, away from the real world, and away from any reality that you might otherwise know, this becomes reality. And so you're terrified and you believe it. Now, I feel like I've been waiting my whole life to draw that. It was very enlivening to actually try and capture that. But in relation to this thing about underground
comics, is that
something
you drew,
that,
had you tackled before?
That's also
like,
before,
like
as
a
even
as
a kid, kind of fantasy.
I'm sorry?
Was that something like you had tackled even before, kind of as a kid, that the specific scene? Because like, I like that early on in the book you talk like drawing there was kind of an aspect to your personality.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was also the first time that I really got into drawing and got into making art and all that and received some accolades for it. So that was, if there was anything good about being at this place, I could argue it was that. But where I was going was, you know, this underground comics thing that you mentioned. That was really the first time I had come upon underground comics. Somebody had showed them to me when I was at the school. And what I was attempting to do was sort of draw a parallel between that demonic world that I was shown, which I wasn't really ready for in the form of underground comics, any more than I was ready for that nighttime chat about Satan worship. So the point is, I was being thrown into this world that was essentially demonic and having to deal with it. You know?
You're, I think, well known for kind of, I think, breathing life into that style and kind of, you know, continuing it. And the book itself very much is like a amorphous underground style. Was that something when you kind of tackled the idea of this larger graphic novel and, again, kind of the subject matter and your whole life, did you experiment with the style at all, or like how you wanted to tackle it in the book? I think this is very unique in the way you tackle the early on stuff, and even then when you as an adult are exploring more, the style seems to get a lot looser and you seem to explore more of the panels, and you know, there's a lot of breakdowns in the layouts and stuff like that. Was this something you, as you progress throughout the book, kind of exploring more as bringing in more of the kind of underground and like 60s aspect of comics?
I'm not sure. To be really honest with you, I'm not one of these artists that, I'm always amazed by artists that can do this, where they come up with a new style for a new comic that they do. I don't know how they do that. I could never do that. I could never think that way. And I could never build something up from scratch and be like, that's my style. Or even think that's my style. I used to say I try not to have a style, but that's actually kind of bullshit, because it's obvious that I do. I know it has its antecedents, so to speak, in underground comics, and you can see that, but I'm definitely not, I don't look at comics anyway, but I definitely don't look at underground comics anymore. So the short answer to your question is no, I basically just like approach it as organically as possible. And if anything, what I would say is that this is actually a form of realism, the approach that I take. And the thing that I'm most indebted to, if anything, visually these days, is movies and photography. Like, I do a lot of drawing from photographs, not necessarily for comics, but I will draw from them just to improve my drawing and get a naturalistic look, and to draw buildings and things like that that you can never remember. But in terms of visual style, I don't think I have a tendency too much to borrow from anybody. There are some panels there where, like, the one that I was mentioning where I'm first shown underground comics, and I did do this really demonic drawing copied from an issue of Zap Comics, because I was trying to capture this terrifying world to a 13-year-old of seeing something by S. Clay Wilson, which was just, you know, demonic and sexual and over the top. And as I'm trying to say, was something I was as unready for as everything else that was going on at that school.
And I mean, you've mentioned the school, and I think the interesting kind of, like you said, the influence now, or the interest now in like buildings and kind of drawing from that aspect. Obviously the school in itself is a character, and even throughout the book, you like it gets really detailed in even New York City becomes kind of a character in its own. Is that something, again, kind of exploring interests more? Like, obviously the Gothic setting of the school is really interesting, and you do a really great job of kind of setting scenes cinematically. Is that something, again, kind of exploring more the interests now in buildings or aspects of the city?
Well, I think one thing that's really important for me, like, for me, everything in autobiography, for it to work, is about tone. If I believe the tone, I'm going to probably believe the story. So it was very important to me to capture this frightening Gothic tone of what that boarding school felt like, because then you're going to believe me when I'm telling you the story that I was there. So that's always very important to me with capturing details, and that, for me, is one reason why details are worth drawing, because then that world becomes tangible, you know?
Mm.
And the same thing goes with, you know, New York is really a character in the book, though it might not initially seem it, because, you know, the book is about school, but it's also about various places I've ended up in my life afterwards. And so I'm showing these different aspects to say Times Square, the way Times Square was in its bad old days, and then the way Times Square is more recently, where the strip clubs are still there, it's just that they're a different animal. And just like the earlier parts of Times Square were much grittier and grungier. And so there's a lot of New York in there, including Tompkins Square Park and the early 90s. And yeah, it's very important to, if I'm going to capture the eras that my character inhabits, I really need to make you believe them. So yeah, it's important to capture those things like buildings, streets, people, the people that would be there, you know?
There's quite a few, I think, full page spreads, especially of the city, that are, like you said, the second you see them, they're very kind of engrossing in the way they bring you in and make you feel not only like the liveliness of the city, but also kind of, like you said, the emotion and tone of that specific time you're kind of setting with the character.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's definitely something I was attempting to do. I mean, the other thing I enjoyed doing here was capturing and contrasting, say, the suburbs where I grew up, you know, which I didn't like, and I expressed that at various times in the book, and contrasting that against New York City. So that you're seeing something that's kind of, I don't know, you know how the suburbs are, kind of boring and bland, and yet at the same time, kind of safe and clean. And New York was none of those things. So it was enjoyable to put those things up against each other, you know.
You address kind of in the intro of the book, I think that's been out in previews as well, kind of tackling this nonfiction aspect of it, and how comics and even underground comics have really been important culturally to kind of be like a speak piece to that, and really not shy away from that. And for someone who's kind of, I think Chicago was a little, I know it's like, that's kind of a little of you in it as well. Is this something for you, tackling these nonfiction and almost autobiographical books? Why do you think comics is kind of the best or appropriate medium for you to do that, or work so well specifically for comics?
Okay, well, I guess what I'd say to that is that comics have, for my money, the way I've seen it, comics have headed in this more personal direction since at least the 50s, you know, dating back to what Harvey Kurtzman was doing with Mad, or the war comics that he did. Those were very personal stories about war, up close and personal. I don't know if you're familiar with too much of that, but those particular comics had a very personal feel to them, and it was partly due to Harvey Kurtzman's use of the brush, which was very warm. And so he was doing that, and around the same time he was also doing the satire he was doing in Mad, which was also an attack, sort of personal attack, on a lot of what he saw as insipid in American culture. Now, if you take that and you go forward another 15 years of when underground comics came in, they were also very personal. And they were just headed in this very personal direction. That's the way I would look at it, is that organically, that's where they were headed. And that's what got interesting in comics for me, which was that stylistically, all these artists had their own voice, and all of them, including the ones that weren't doing autobiographical comics, their work still had a really strong autobiographical slant to it because their own voice was so strong. And from there, it really became like the obvious next step for a lot of them, including, say, Robert Crumb, to really head into autobiography. He wasn't the first to do it. There were others who were doing it really well even before he got into that. But the whole thing of autobiography for a cartoonist gets interesting in a way that I don't think a film documentary is necessarily as interesting. Because with a film documentary, you're just pointing a camera at something and it's picking up everything you're shooting. The art may come in the editing of it, but that's reality that you were filming. Now, when a cartoonist is drawing his or her past, that's not reality that they're drawing. That's their memory to the best that they can recall it and draw it and put it together in the style that they have. So that kind of personal narrative, that kind of personal memoir, is really kind of coming at something from an unusual angle. And it can't and usually doesn't really make an attempt at objectivity. In a way, you could say something like Art Spiegelman's Mouse is really going with that, because it's taking it out of the realm of people and shifting it into this metaphorical thing of cats and mice. So it's obviously right off the bat a real story, but it's headed into this unusual territory because of that visual metaphor. But my feeling is that all comics really, there's a tendency, especially with the good ones, that they don't seem like a documentary. They're not. They're a person's experience. So a lot of the drawing that you see in my work in this book, I would call it quasi-realistic. It doesn't look like anything you see when you walk down the street. You don't see the kind of detailed world that I'm depicting, but that's my world. And see, that's I guess where I'm going. That's what it is that I like about what autobiographical comics can do. They can be very personal, very weird. They can be somebody's own vision that the artist can't otherwise draw. They have to draw it that way, so it comes out that way, and it might come off a little skewed or a little weird, but that's their memory and that's their feel for what it was all like.
Right. That's very interesting, and I don't know if I've ever kind of thought of it that way, but obviously that's, I think, very true. Like you said, kind of if you're a filmmaker, and I would say, like, even if you were trying to make a documentary about Chartwell Manor, you as a creator of that, a director, no matter kind of the way you frame it, you're still kind of taking realistic images and putting them in there, and then you're kind of, I guess, skewing the view to that more realistic setting. But when you're actually putting, you know, the brush to paper, you're presenting it the way you see it, you remember it, which is the,
right,
is
and
the
only
most important thing, because it is
only me. Because if it was a documentary, there's no way it could be only me. I'd have to get permission to film what remains of that school, if it even does remain. Then I'd have to find all the grown-ups who were students at this place way back then. I'd have to record their feelings about it. I'd have to edit it all together and take all these different realistic points and make them connect. I don't have any of those problems when I'm just drawing it. It's just, this is my story and I'm telling you this is how it happened. Or at any rate, this is the story I'm telling you, you know?
Was there, when you were plotting this out, and again, a very, I think, important part of this story is you connecting back with this time in your life, and then later in the book you connect with other people who are kind of working through that as well. Was there any thoughts in your mind kind of how to tackle that, and having essentially real people in there with real experiences? How was that as a creator, but also kind of as a person who was, you know, vehemently involved in this story? Was that kind of just part of it, and you were, again, telling it from your perspective?
Well, I mean, my perspective is the only one I know. I wasn't about to, you know, go around, excuse me, trying to locate these people and talk to them about what they remembered. Some of this stuff is public record. I found it just by looking up the court cases of what happened. You know, I should add here that Chartwell Manor as a school lasted from about, I'll say, 1970 to maybe 1985, and then it was falling apart, and then there were court cases that were building up and all that. A lot of this is shown in the book. I use actual newspaper clippings because I needed to show that kind of reality as a documentary reality. But the rest of it was just me drawing my experience as I experienced it, as I felt it. As far as the other students go, one thing that was kind of interesting was that some of the students just coincidentally happened to contact me during the course of time while I was drawing the book. So I imagine they were just, like I said, these things have a way of following you around. And so it doesn't really surprise me that some of these kids and their memories of it when I was there would follow me around too and get a hold of me and want to talk to me about some of what they experienced. So, yeah.
Obviously when we're recording, it's prior to it coming out, and will be dropping either the week of or shortly when it's out. Is that something, have you shared it with anyone in that circle? Or obviously I imagine you probably don't have, like, you know, contact with them, but is that something you think of people reading this and kind of being able to?
Yeah, I think about it. I mean, the thing that, like, I wonder about, one thing I say in the foreword is that I don't go out of my way to make anyone look bad or good. Mm-hmm. I just try to depict it as it all happened. And I am sympathetic towards pretty much basically everybody who ended up at that school because, you know, as I say, you don't get to pick your own childhood, and no child should end up having to go to a school like this. But having said that, no one is entirely innocent, even a kid. So I was trying to depict how these kids interacted with each other, and if they have a problem with it, I guess I'll find out. I don't know. I feel like I did everybody a favor because I feel like at least all the kids that went to this school, this book needed to be drawn, and I feel like a lot of kids went through a lot because of that school. There's a page where a DA is talking about what happened to all these students after the fact.
Yeah.
And I could really feel for all that because I went through a lot having gone there. So it's not like just anybody can draw a book like this. And in a sense, this is not really simply just about a school like this, but it's about what happens to all manner of kids who can't fend for themselves and for whatever reason end up in a place like this that they'd be better off not ending up in. And showing what that's like and what follows it, and hopefully you know, things can get better. They sometimes do, you know.
And so I always, part of stuff we talk about a lot of times is, you know, I think they're either, you know, the media or the criticism around of comics when things are out, and part of the, we've discussed a bunch why, like, I was originally interested in starting a podcast years ago talking to actual creators about the amount of work and effort that goes into creating comics, was because I was, you know, kind of I used to do reviews a long time ago, and it was really like kind of annoying the way we attacked like tackled reviews and stuff like that. And the idea of something like this, where again you're putting kind of very much yourself front forward, and it's, you know, a very, you know, thick and like involved process in reading it. What, like, how is that as a creator, is putting out something like this, and then as slowly as people are kind of getting their hands on it and talking to you about it, is it a different experience, especially kind of as an artist, kind of mixing the both? Like, you want to know artistically how it is approached, but also, again, it's very much your life and your you on display in this. Putting out something like this kind of versus even more kind of like less autobiographical comics, like the idea of mixing yourself in a creator and then the criticism that is going to be coming when, you know, people read it and just behind that, yes.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. It's different insofar as like, if people think I was fucked up to draw this book, they're going to be not just, say, attacking how I told the story, but maybe attacking me for deciding to draw it. You know what I mean? I mean, you're putting yourself more on the line when you tell your own personal story, and it's very personal. And you have to face that. And I don't have a problem with that. I after doing Chicago, my last book, that was very personal. And the thing about doing really personal work is it's not quite the same as the other kind of work you might be doing, which, say, might be, I don't know, being a crowd pleaser, an entertainer, telling a story, trying to get a laugh, keeping people purely and simply entertained. And as a cartoonist, you try a lot of different things, you wear a lot of hats, and so you do that stuff too. You don't, at least in my case, just do autobiography. When you're doing autobiography, you're still, you have to adhere to a lot of that. You still have to be a storyteller. You have to captivate people with your drawing and your writing, and you have to never be boring, because that's the one unpardonable sin in comics, is to be boring. And you've got to do all that, but at the same time, you've got to throw caution to the wind and show yourself naked in a way, and you've got to take what comes up. People might laugh, or people might appreciate it. People might be disgusted. People might, I don't know. They probably won't be bored, but you don't know how they're going to react. And you just have to, you have to take that. And if you're going to do autobiography, you really have to accept that.
Yeah.
That, because if you're not throwing caution to the wind and just telling it the way you experienced it, you probably have no business doing autobiography. I mean, the worst kind of autobiography I've seen is usually of the macho variety, where somebody is trying to impress you with how tough they are. I mean, it's always, yeah, it's a guy thing, and you know, you've seen a lot of this kind of stuff. And I actually love Bukowski, but that aspect of Bukowski where he's just trying to show you what a tough drunk he was, or even what a tough, foolish drunk he was, I don't have a lot of use for it, because I feel like I'm being sold a bill of goods. And the one thing that you want from autobiography, from memoir, is to at least believe that you're not being sold a bill of goods. You are, in that the artist, writer,
yeah,
put the whole thing together, and it's a confection of his. He's baked this tasty morsel for you to devour. But, you know, he's trying to give you something personal, so if all that makes sense.
Oh, definitely. And I think one interesting thing, and again, I think it's a interesting kind of arc in the story, is your arc as, you know, a young adult, and then adult, and then obviously then a parent. And there's, you know, a scene with you and your daughter and your mom and all that aspect of it. And this is just, again, something putting this out, like, I just, as someone with kids, and I have a podcast, and I've said things, and I'm like, at some point they're going to hear them, and that's fine. I obviously am, you know, a parent who is very kind of open with that stuff. Is that something, again, with your now being a parent and kind of exposing your daughter to, like, you know, this is dad, this is, you know, this is the world. Is that something you've, it's something as a parent, kind of your daughter getting to see this side of your life if she ever reads it?
Well, yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, I know that she knows that she's in it, and what she thinks of it, I don't know. She's 20 at this point, so she may well see it if she wants to see it. What I'd say, I mean, is what I've told her, that she's an important figure in my life and in my story, because what she represents is the possibility of growth, both in her life as a child and in my life as a parent and as an artist, that we can grow through these things. We can move beyond them to some extent. One thing that I've said is that this is not a recovery memoir, because that's just not what it's about. That it's about the scars we have and how we come to learn to live with them. But growth is possible, and that's one reason why it was important that I include my daughter in the book, because she shows that life is better than some of the things that happen to us. You know, life can be better. Life can be made better. So, yeah, and I mean, yeah, we'll see, you know?
Yeah. I mean, speaking of better, again, I've talked about, like, I you know, lucky enough to have read this early as we talk, and I think it's outstanding, easily one of the best things I've read in 2021. But obviously it's coming out through Fantagraphics, which, you know, I think of Fantagraphics as kind of like the criterion of comics, just of kind of the quality and history there. And then as I'm reading this book, like, it is like quintessentially, like, it feels like, you know, kind of that tier and that kind of, as I'm reading, I'm like, this is like the quality of like great comics. Was that something kind of publishing through them was very important to be them? And how has it been working? Have you worked with them before, but like, how is it kind of in that process and, you know, being with Fantagraphics, how's that been?
It's really been great. I mean, I really think the world of them. They've been publishing my stuff, in fact, for like about 30 years now or more, dating back to when myself and fellow cartoonist Kaz took a book that we were editing and brought it to them, and Kim Thompson was very happy to get it, and that was a good getting a foot in the door experience for me, because it, first of all, it really made it like a big responsibility that I was going to have to put this book together and make sure that it came together well with all these different artists in it, and they loved it, and it was good insofar as, like, I wasn't just hustling them for something for Glenn Head. I was hustling them for something for, you know, a really good package, and they wanted that. So that's just to tell you how things got going, and since then they've really stuck by me in ways that kind of amazed me, because there was times when I stopped doing comics, I was fed up with it, and I was just painting and collecting things, and but they were fine when I came back to them. And Kim Thompson, God rest his soul, was quite good. And so it went on from there. And yeah, and Eric's been terrific. Eric Reynolds has been fantastic towards me with this book, and really believed in it. That's very important too. The comics game can be, you know, kind of a down and dirty little charade, so it's good to know that the people who are putting your work out believe in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
yeah. What kind of, I wanted to ask, like, especially with a story this personal and autobiographical, when you're working, does Fantagraphics kind of just let you do your own thing? Like, especially having worked with them so long, like, there's not a lot of editorial oversight, that kind of deal?
I guess the answer to that is, like, for all the time I've been dealing with them, I've never gotten any editorial oversight, and that's kind of what I would want. Yeah, I mean, they never stick their nose in anywhere with anything like that. I mean, Eric was very thorough about how he proofread this thing. There were commas that I would never have dreamed I'd missed, you know? as far as actually editing it or anything like that, I never came across any of that. I mean, I think they are really strong believers in the freedom of expression for comics to be what they're supposed to be. And I don't think they want to get too involved with telling anybody what they should or shouldn't do. When I first sent this off to Fantagraphics, I was like, this is how it is. And I didn't hear anything back about like anything, like we're talking about changing anything. I did finally decide to change one page in it, and I redrew it because it was too sexually explicit. And I thought long and hard about it because I didn't want to censor myself, but I also realized I could do something that would work just as well without being as sexually explicit. I'd like to get this book into libraries and places like that. And I realized I was gonna not allow that to be a possibility if I ran that page as it was. So I redrew it, and I'm glad I did. My sisters are gonna see this book, and they know about it. So it's one of those things about censoring yourself. I personally feel that, like, as I said earlier, I'm at least as influenced by movies as I am by comics. And one thing that's always very noteworthy to me is that the best movies that were made, which for my money happened between, I don't know, 1965 and 1982 or something, all of those great ones, like The Godfather or Chinatown, all of them, they were rated R. They didn't need to be rated X. And they didn't need to go that extra mile into over-the-top sexuality to get the job done. And I think that's, for me, that's worth noting, that you got to be able to go far enough, but you don't want to have to go further than that if it's not going to make the work better. You know what I mean? And I'm fine with offending people, but I'm not going to do it on purpose. You know what I mean? That's something that, growing up with underground comics, as much as I love all of them, it's not always necessitated for somebody to do their best work to have that stuff in there. They need the freedom to be able to put whatever they want in there. But if they're doing it just to offend people, what they're doing then is they're making work from the outside in as opposed to the inside out. If you're doing shock value work, what you're thinking about is how is this going to affect people? Which, for me, that's not good art. Good art is what am I trying to do? What am I trying to say? Comes from within, you know? So a lot of underground comics, I think, actually made those kinds of missteps sometimes where they were just trying to be shocking, you know?
And I think that again is one of the kind of great lines you tell in the book, and I think it is extremely effective, kind of the way you approach a lot of scenes. Again, that I think not necessarily you pull back, but you present them in a way that again is you're not only experienced but also like I mean you leave the reader to understand things in a way that need to be understood, and then kind of sit with again the more important thing I think is the emotion afterwards and kind of those experiences, and I think that's kind of where the story really focuses on. That's the really kind of affecting and kind of interesting aspects to it. And for my kind of final question, and we've talked about it a bunch, but you mentioned the library, and again, I think one of the interesting things about the book is your kind of introduction to comics in the school and everything like that. And often I'll ask kind of, what do people hope people take away from this? But like if someone at the age of kind of 12 or 13 gets to read this book or something like around that and is exposed to this, like what do you hope they take away from their experience with this comic?
Somebody who's 12 or 13 and they read this book?
Well, yeah, just like around that age, or like someone kind of their first experience to comics, like kind of the way you were exposed to comics.
Well, you know, I guess first and foremost, what I really want to give any reader is a really good ride. I'm not looking to do this to make the world a better place per se. I don't know that that's actually the artist's job. But I am trying to tell a really engrossing, affecting story that grabs you and won't let go, and you'll now I feel like I'm trying to sell it, and I didn't mean to do that, but as far as a kid reading it, I just hope they would feel some compassion for all the kids in there and really enjoy the story, you know, enjoy the art, enjoy the story. I think actually that's why we read comics anyway. I think that's what we're really looking for, is a really good story and good art. And I think it's just basically that. I think that's why we are drawn to them, why we're drawn to making them. We want to do that. We want to accomplish that task, you know?
Yeah. And I like I said, I can't express enough. I think you not only accomplished it, you exceeded it with this book. I think it's amazing. As prep for books, I will often read it a few times, and I've read it, and it's such a great experience to kind of reread it again, because again, I think visually you do so much, not only detail wise, but I think you explore the page. I think kind of the way you approach things cinematically and the way you kind of approach things angle wise, I think is really great in this book. I think artistically it's fantastic. So like I said, I think it's amazing. You'll be able to pick it up in stores, pre-order it. But if anyone wants to find out more about you or the book itself, like what would be the best way they could do it?
The best thing to do would probably be to go on my Instagram, which is Glennhead Comics. That's GlennHead, HEAD Comics. And, there's more information there, and they can also contact me on that too.
Because I always forget, Tim, where's your stuff?
I write over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madura.
Oh, okay. Great.
And you're listening to this podcast, again, you don't stumble upon comic book podcasts. It's too weird and niche, but at Pages and Panels, or Pages _ Panels and all that stuff. But again, the most important thing is to go out and pick this up and support Glenn. Like I said, it's fantastic. I've read already surprisingly a lot of stuff in 2021, and this is one of the topics I had so much... I feel weird saying I had so much fun reading, but it's such a great experience and kind of just engrossing book. And I can't wait for people to get their hands on it. I can't wait to get a physical copy and read it.
Thanks to both of you guys. Thanks very much.
No, thank you.
Okay.
This episode.